Good morning, everybody. Good to see you. Good to sit with you. I don't know if you can hear, but there's some competition from the birds outside this gorgeous morning. So we're in the week of Shalach. And God says to Moses, Shalach lecha anashim, vayeturu et eretz kanan, asher ani noten, Livnei Yisrael. Send people to scout the land of Canaan that I am giving to the children of Israel. So one head from each tribe is sent to check out the land. And Moshe explains that the scout's job is to see, quote, Ma ha'aretz, literally, what is the land? This is the same simple and difficult directive as our mindfulness practice. Not why or how or a big story, but simply what is. What is arising now in this new land of this next moment of awareness? What can be noticed in this earth body, physically, emotionally, mentally? And those two words, what is also a contemplative name for the divine. What is arising now? How am I being guided in this moment? So I remember experiencing this gap between what is and what I feared or hoped for as a young woman fresh out of Brandeis. And my professor, Maury Stein, who taught us co-counseling in the round room of Perlman Lounge in the sociology department, next door to us was Larry Rosenberg teaching Zen meditation. And Maury said to me, Shalach lach, go out and teach co-counseling. So I spent the better part of a decade going around the world doing co-counseling workshops, helping people get in touch with their pain and waking up to a wider reality that could hold it. So one day I walked from my Harvard Square apartment to the Cambridge Friends Meeting House, which was also in Harvard Square. And it was my first public lecture on co-counseling to a group that I mostly did not know. It took place at the Cambridge Friends Meeting House, and there could not be a more kind group gathered. And yet, as I walked with my dear brother, Rob, and my friend, Eileen, I felt I was going to a firing squad. I was terrified. I wanted to run in the opposite direction. But I did give the introductory lecture to a packed house. 35 people signed up for a 15-week course, and that launched my first career as a co-counseling teacher. And I taught, you know, for the rest of the decade, and then including 5 years in Israel with Israelis and Palestinians. So I have to admit that my fear of speaking publicly has not diminished over 50 years. And each time I teach, despite my fear, now I know that I can honor the fear that is part of and not separate from this wider reality. So the scouts return to Moshe and the Israelites, and they give a report that from the perspective of our practice could be called bear attention. They say, it's a good land. It's a fertile land. And here is a humongous cluster of grapes as evidence that the land flows with milk and honey. Bare awareness allows the mind to be attentive, observant, and kind with whatever it notices, arising inside and around us. Bare attention enables us to stay grounded in the midst of an ever-changing, unknowable, divine, gift of the next moment. But then the scouts feel their terror and act as if what they perceive through the lens of fear is the whole reality. And they cry, "We can't go up there. They are more powerful than us. That land," quote, "devours its settlers. The people are huge. And we looked like grasshoppers to ourselves. So we must have looked to them." The Israelites wail and rant as Caleb and Joshua try to be heard above the din. "Hey, see that it's an exceedingly good land." But the Israelites are overcome with terror. The first three words of the parasha are Shalach Lecha Anashim. And the words are usually translated as "send out the scouts to check the land promised to us by God." But literally, they could be translated as "send," shalach, lecha, to yourself, anashim, people. Send to yourself, go to yourself. Notice what's inside arising, because if you don't, you will get lost in fear, in hopes, in proliferating stories. You will mistake your mental constructs for reality instead of fleeting conditioned reflexes of that part of our brain, the amygdala, that lets us know whether we should freeze, flee, or fight. So if we don't bring attention to the fear, it constrains our lives and mutes our inherent wisdom. So when I sit down to meditate or simply pay attention to what is arising, my mind drifts away from breath and into story. And sometimes I hear a kind of very familiar shaming voice that says, "Look, you can't even meditate." And then I notice the voice and my mood swings in the opposite direction to pride. "Hey, I see you, shame." Right? But if I notice the sense of pride as pleasant, feels like this, or shame as unpleasant and it feels like that, then these judgmental constructs of a false reality dissolve, at least momentarily. And we can respond to the new land of each moment in fresh ways, not completely bound by fear. The Torah teaches this parasha that to pay attention to this land of what is, to see reality unfolding, is a matter of life and death. The scouts return from checking out the land, and they've been gone for 40 days. 40 is the number in Torah that signifies birth, change, renewal. On Noah's Ark, it rained for 40 days. The mikveh must be filled with 40 seahs, measures of water. Moshe was on the mountain for 40 days. And there are 40 days from the first day of Elul, when we begin to blow the shofar, to the last blast on Yom Kippur. And of course, the human baby takes on average 40 weeks to be born. So at first, the scouts tell the story of the new land with bare attention. Yes, it's a good land, a fertile land. And here are the grapes to show you, the milk and honey that awaits us. Then they report their fears as if it's the whole reality. We cannot go up there. Fear chokes them as Caleb and Joshua try to reach them, exclaiming the goodness of the land. But these scouts frighten the Israelites, who collapse in terror. And the people whose lives depend on the scouts' report, are at the mercy of their perception of reality filtered through fear. Our own news media does a pretty good job of scaring us to death. and making us feel like grasshoppers in relationship to the task of healing this broken world. The scouts begin with their report with the word FS, zero. Aviva Zornberg says that FS annihilates personal meaning. The scouts' story, quote, attacks not only their own potency or God's power, but their own minds, their ability to make meaning. This is not simply a matter of conflict between desire and fear. The land that is flowing with milk and honey becomes a land that consumes its inhabitants. The spies' report caused the people to fall into what Zornberg terms an apocalyptic despair, wishing they were never born. The Israelites long to return to Egypt, which Zornberg says is the place of primal non-being. To be a no-thing is, in effect, to annihilate one's birth. The extremity of FS, zero, makes one's own thought intolerable. And haven't we had moments in our meditation when our own thoughts become intolerable? Certainly on my first week-long meditation retreat, that was my experience. I thought, oh, wow, I had resolved that fear and that struggle long ago. But no, after meeting the repetitive voices for a week, trying to bring kind attention, when I left the retreat, life was different. For a while, it was kind of like living in the land of milk and honey. It was like a lifeline to a new land, a new way to be in this unknowable divine unfolding. In contrast to the unknowable silence of the Midbar, the desert, Zornberg says, quote, God is aggrieved at the spies' knowingness. They rush to foreclose possibilities in their understanding. Yes, it feels to me like that is what the ego mind has been charged to do for thousands of years, to judge quickly whether to flee, free, freeze, or fight, based on instinctive habit patterns. When we bring a modicum of kindness to instinctive habit patterns over and over, the new land arises to meet us, not to devour, but to envelop us and to guide our unknowable steps. That makes mindfulness a kind of intervention. In that moment, we can notice what's coming through our sense doors and how judgment and reactivity erupt in proliferating stories. We can return to our source, this flow of blessing through the next breath that greets all with compassion and kind curiosity. Yes, yes, dear one, it's like this now. Now it's like this. I watch my own tendency to flee from this moment, the pull towards fantasy or disconnect. Norman Fisher writes, when we act on our natural inclination to avoid pain, we can never avoid pain. We can try to put it off, distract, rationalize, or try to fix it. The Israelites are fleeing from actual and imagined pain. And Norman says, the stronger the habit of fleeing from pain, the more anxious we get. So for me, that means that when we notice our tendency to flee, there is the opportunity to turn towards, to drop the direct experience and release the story, which may come back in the next moment. And the Israelites are fleeing from pain big time. And here Zornberg offers up a teaching by the psychoanalyst psychoanalyst Wilfred Bion regarding turning towards the pain. He writes, if one's emotional reality is despair, what is most important is not that one is in despair. It's the attitude towards one's despair. Through one's basic attentiveness, mindfulness, one's despair, he says, can tell its story. Then one enters into a profound dialogue with it. And I would say, I would add to Bion's observation that a lot of that in our practice is done through paying attention to where the pain is manifesting in the body, right? Like bringing it down from the brain and its stories about it to how it actually lives in that moment, which sometimes dissipates it completely and sometimes gets us to go deeper. Zornberg writes, the wilderness is the place of emptiness. It lacks kavod, which he defines as the density and structure of the settled world. It's precisely in this silent, unmarked place that the voice of God will resound. So right now, let's take a moment before we go into speech with each other to enter the silent, unmarked place. I'll time us for a minute and bring you back with the bell. Scout the land that is arising.